15. Welcome to my home, Raven that the humans call Dog.
You have found a way to speak directly into my mind.
Human speech is hard for you, and for me also. This is better.
You are not human, yet they showed me that your children labor in the fields to grow food that humans eat.
My children eat some of the same foods, and the Pecaninos eat almost all of them.
Are you then beasts of burden for the humans to exploit?
When we choose to be. But when they took you to see my children in the fields, did you see any humans as overseers?
So they are not slaves?
Not belonging to humans.
Then who?
They belong to me. They, in some ways, are me, or part of me. If I died, they would die too. I believe that means they are not free individuals in the way that you are free.
Can I and my people trust these humans?
You will have to define these and humans. Humans are fundamentally untrustworthy, and some of the most intelligent of this particular group of humans, the ones who are studying your world and now beginning to visit it, are completely untrustworthy so far. Humans have a long developmental period. Many reach adulthood without learning how to control themselves.
They once destroyed your entire species.
With one obvious exception.
And you hide your existence from most humans because they would try to destroy you again.
We don't know what they would do. They would all react differently, and even they are bad at predicting how they will respond to future events. So everyone is safer when only a few humans and Pecaninos know that we exist.
Is that what we must also do?
I don't know what you must do.
What do you think about our chance of survival if it comes to war between these humans and us?
These humans will not go to war with you. But if your existence becomes known, and even a few humans on other worlds believe that your world is the source of the Descolada virus, they will send a fleet to blow your planet up.
And if they did, what would you do?
I would feed your people. When Jane and Peter and Miro bring as many of you as they can to Lusitania, then they would move you to other colony worlds that offer more opportunities for you to feed and breed.
Why doesn't Lusitania offer such opportunities?
The Descolada virus destroyed most of the flora and fauna of Lusitania. Only the species pairs that it succeeded in synthesizing have survived, and these include nothing that you could eat. Only what we are growing could help you, and only because you are also from Earth originally, like the plants the humans need us to grow for them.
This Descolada virus must have been a terrible thing.
Its devastation happened before any humans came here, and before Ender Wiggin came here to bring me out of my cocoon.
When your people left you as their sole survivor and marked your location in ways that only Ender Wiggin would recognize, they trusted your entire existence as a species to that one person, but he is dead.
His Iowa lives on in Peter Wiggin.
I don't trust Peter Wiggin.
He is still discovering himself. He gets better every day, partly because he is married to Siwang Mu and has learned to respect her.
Can I trust his word?
Yes.
Do you trust his word?
I trust Jane and Miro, Peter and Wang Mu, Ayla Ribera, and I have high hopes for Sprout Delphiki. Hopes not so high for Thulium Delphiki. Her abilities are astounding. Her maturity not impressive. And her word is very nearly worthless, so far.
I came here hoping for answers.
I have told you the truth, and to verify my sincerity, you can see that I live here completely at the mercy of the humans.
How long would it take you to build a new fleet of starships that could challenge the human empire?
Alone, it would take me 20 years. But now that I have my own sisters on all the worlds colonized from Lusitania in the past year, if we all worked together, we could build such a fleet within 3 years. But what would be the purpose?
Vengeance? We ravens have a long memory for harm and insult.
So do humans.
Should we submit, then?
Treat them like equals. Negotiate rules for their presence on your planet. Set deadlines for them to leave again.
How much information should we give them?
All of it. If you keep secrets, they will know it. They will not trust you then. Tell all. Show all.
Have you done that?
Jane knows, and we trust her to know which humans to tell and when.
We have no Jane.
You are Jane to your own people. Now that we have this connection, I will never let it go.
Across all the light years between our worlds?
I am bound to you by love and honor. You and I are sisters now. Call me in your mind, and I will hear you. Memorandum. Transcript dictated to Jane by the Hive Queen. Quoted in Demosthenes, the civilizations of birds.
Sprout did not want to go when Thulium decided to leave. He understood that it seemed impossible they could learn anything with all their gear stolen, with the Kias flying chaotically around them, making it hard to concentrate. But Sprout concentrated anyway, because he did not wish to go. No, it was stronger than mere desire. He refused to go. He refused with such firmness that it was not worth trying to discuss it with Thulium. He knew that she would carry him with her and discuss it only after the fact, and he refused to play that game. He liked the games the Kias were playing better. So with all the power of his will, which he rarely asserted on the Herodotus because what was the point? Everybody always did what they wanted. With all the force that was in him, he insisted on staying exactly where he was, in this meadow, on this planet, surrounded by these birds. Even though he felt the inward wrenching that always accompanied flying outside and in, when it stopped, he had not moved out of his place. Or had he? Had she carried him outside? And did he then come back inside to the place of his choosing? Did it matter which? He was here, where he wanted to be, and Thulium was not with him, which is what he wished for at this moment for a little while. The Kias were still swarming, but they immediately altered their behavior and began flying right at him, then rising up or moving left and right when they got close. Others flew over his head. It felt threatening. Then they started squirting their poo at him. It was white, and as soon as he saw it, the white stuff hit him wherever it had been aimed. And where they were aiming was his face, his hair, his whole head. He was blinded within moments as loose poo dripped down from his forehead. He dared not open his eyes because he had no idea how acidic the bird poop might be. He knew that the green stuff was fecal from the intestines, and the white stuff and the liquid came from the kidneys. Plenty of uric acid, he imagined, though his reading had never gone very far, mostly because on the Herodotus, birds were only in books and vids. Aware that vision plays a part in balance, Sprout knelt down in the grass so he would not fall under the onslaught. He thought of lying down and trying to wipe the stuff off his face in the grass, but he figured that calm acceptance of their abuse was a wiser strategy. If they wanted to give him a poop veneer, he would tolerate it. Finally, he stopped hearing the fluttering of wings and feeling the impact of globs of poo. With one hand, he wiped enough stuff away from his mouth that he could open it to speak, but he instantly regretted it, because some of it went right into his mouth. But he decided to tolerate that, too, and did not spit and gag or otherwise show weakness. "Has everyone emptied their bowels?" he asked. He felt the Kia alight on his shoulder.
"We have a few in reserve, but mostly yes."
"How would you recommend that I clean it off so I can see again?" asked Sprout.
"It is already set. The first globs were mostly uric acid, but then it was all green stuff which dries on a base of acid like concrete."
"And that's what's in my hair?" said Sprout.
"We used to use that defense when we mobbed hawks and brood parasites. It would not come out of their feathers and weighed them down so they couldn't fly. Now the brood parasites have learned to raise their own young and stay away from our nesting areas. The hawks only take mammals and reptiles and amphibians. When you load a hawk or a cowbird or a cuckoo with concrete that it can't remove, it will never mate again, because who will mate with a bird that can't fly? Usually they end up running into something and killing themselves."
"So you were trying to kill me," said Sprout.
"That would be unwelcoming," said the bird.
"Are you Royal Son?" asked Sprout.
"The Royal Mother calls me that."
"Will it prompt another attack if I walk in the direction that I think is toward the river, in hopes of dissolving some of this and washing it away?"
"You may do whatever pleases you, as long as you don't crush a flower."
Sprout sighed. Since I can't see and there are flowers all over this meadow, I assume that I will inevitably crush a flower.
Don't birds on your world mob intruders and poo them away? Asked Royal Sun. What do you usually do?
There is only one bird-like species on Lusitania, the Zingidorus, plus, at this moment, dog, and the place where I grew up wasn't a world at all. It was a spaceship traveling at relativistic speed, and we had no birds on board. If we got covered in something unpleasant, we bathed with soap and water, and we kept washing until it was all gone.
If birds couldn't bear space travel, said Royal Sun, none of us would be here. There was nothing on this world that could fly when we arrived.
Royal Sun, will you lead me to the river? Will you warn me so I don't crush any flowers? Sprout had tried very hard all along to keep impatience and anger out of his voice, but with this plea, he tried to sound especially humble, mild, unthreatening, and peaceful.
You're not used to asking animals for favors, are you?
Asked Royal Sun. Are you animals? Asked Sprout. I thought you were people.
To humans, we're animals.
Not after you've made it clear that you can speak and understand.
Why did your sister leave?
Asked Royal Sun. She's my cousin. Her father is my mother's brother.
I know what a cousin is, said Royal Sun. Why did she?
I don't know for sure, said Sprout, because we didn't have a chance to converse before she left. But I assume she left because she realized she couldn't accomplish anything against the resistance of your people.
Not because she was afraid of us?
She had a clear idea of what she wanted to accomplish here. You took away all our gear so she would be unable to do any of it.
We did the same thing to Wang Mu and Peter, said Royal Sun.
No, you didn't, said Sprout.
Well, no, because Wang Mu started speaking to us like people before we got to that stage. Plus, the Raven Council hadn't decided anything yet.
Now they have decided. What? That you can kill me?
Of course not. We know you have powers far beyond anything we can do or even imagine.
My head is encased in bird poo cement.
I will lead you to the river by making this call.
Royal Sun made two squawks.
And if I make this sound,
he made a high chirrup,
stop and go around the flower.
Thank you, said Sprout.
Don't thank me yet, said Royal Sun. I'm sure you'll fall flat on your face at least 9 times before you reach the river.
The total number of falls turned out to be 2, because Royal Sun did a good job of leading him, and he stepped carefully enough not to have his weight on his leading foot, so he usually didn't trip on any obstructions. When he got to the river, he peeled off his shoes and his clothing down to the skin and waded into the water.
Be careful of the crocodiles, said Royal Sun.
Your humans would have to be amazingly stupid to introduce crocodiles before there were any grazing animals for them to eat, especially if they're only just introducing flowering plants. Royal Sun made a noise that might have been Kia laughter.
We had flowering plants right from the beginning. The whole world is covered with flowering plants.
Sprout wanted to demand, then what's all this rigmarole about not stepping on flowers? But he already knew enough about Kia's to know that this was a game, and he was the butt of the joke, and if he got angry, it would only make the joke funnier. He used sand from near the bank of the river to try to scrub the stuff off his face, especially around his eyes. When he rose up out of the water, it felt like he hadn't accomplished a thing.
Very good job, said Royal Sun. Now your concrete face mask is covered with brown mud and yellow sand.
Will I be blind forever? Asked Sprout.
The that depends, said Royal Sun.
So there is a way to dissolve this stuff?
Oddly enough, the solution is simple. Pure uric acid will dissolve the layer of poop, and then you can wash the white stuff away with a bit of scrubbing.
In other words, if you and your friends pee on my head and face, I can get the cement off me.
Don't open your eyes too soon, said Royal Sun. This stuff will be pretty strong.
Again with the fluttering of wings, the close passages, again with the impacts against every part of his head, but especially his face. He did not try to open his eyes. He simply stood in water up to his waist, thinking about crocodiles to keep his mind off the fact that his whole head was now dripping.
Don't try to speak, said Royal Sun. You don't want any of this in your mouth.
Sprout saw no reason to argue with Royal Sun's assumption. After what felt like an hour, but was probably less than 10 minutes, Royal Sun landed on his shoulder.
While your head is still wet, you should go under the water and try that scrubbing thing again.
Without a word, Sprout sank into the water. Judging from the flurry of a wing near his ear, he figured Royal Sun had been taken by surprise at the suddenness of Sprout's response. Maybe Royal Sun even got a little wet. This time the scrubbing worked, though the sand on his eyelids was painful, and he wondered whether his corneas might get scratched. He opened his eyes underwater. The water stung, but in a few moments he was used to it. He rose up to his full height and shook himself as much like a dog as he could manage. He'd seen plenty of vids of that move, and he and the cousins had already determined that humans could only do a poor imitation of it. But he kind of hoped that some of the water would spray out and hit Akia. But when he wiped the water from his eyes, he saw that there wasn't a single bird near him. He walked up onto the riverbank and, of course, his clothing had been taken. He was done with this. He walked back into the water, lay down, and floated on his stomach with his face in the water. All the cousins had been taught to swim when they were infants on Nokonoshima. There had been nowhere to practice swimming on the Herodotus, but what they could do was immerse themselves in the larger of the two bathtubs on the ship and see how long they could hold their breath. Sprout almost always won. So swimming wasn't his goal. Playing dead was the game. He counted heartbeats. This helped to calm him so that his oxygen use went down. He knew he was drifting with the current, but it was lazy and slow this close to the river's mouth. And in the back of his mind was the thought, maybe I brought myself back here. Maybe Thulium carried me outside, and I brought myself back in where I wanted to go. Maybe I can also move myself without Thulium, without anybody. Or maybe Jane was watching him somehow. She was so powerful, but he didn't want her to save him, not yet. He still hadn't accomplished anything except to put up with, quite literally, a lot of crap from the Kias. He knew that his relaxed heartbeat was usually between 50 and 60 beats a minute. So when he reached 135, he figured the birds weren't watching. He was about to roll over on his back when he felt a bird land on his head.
Wake up, stupid human. Birds can smell death. We know you're not dead.
Could they really? He knew vultures could, but not all birds had that amazing sense of smell. Why would Kias ever have evolved it? So he didn't move. He didn't respond in any way. His heart didn't even beat faster.
Will you get out of the water if we bring you back your clothes?
Not enough, thought Sprout. Because it was a question, a conditional statement. If we bring back your clothes.
We will bring you back your clothes, said Royal Sun. We know how long humans can hold their breath. You're not a sea turtle, you foolish boy. Get up and walk while the river's still shallow.
Sprout was beginning to feel the oxygen deprivation with distress. 3 minutes was about as long as he could usually manage, though once, when he was really working at it, he had reached 4 minutes. He was over 3 minutes now. So he stood up. I was resting, he said, as he wiped the water from his eyes and blinked them open. I was rinsing the last of the poo and mud and sand from my eyes.
You were playing a game to test how much we cared about not killing you, and to see if you could get us to give you back your clothes.
I got you to say you would bring me back my clothes, said Sprout. Now we'll see if you keep your word.
Better than you humans keep yours, said Royal Sun.
I have never violated my word, said Sprout, and I never will, as far as it is within my power.
Follow me to your clothing, said Royal Sun.
Sprout half expected to find his clothes in tatters on the grass. Instead, his clothes were laid out on the grass in human shape, as if someone had lain down wearing them and then disappeared. Sprout lifted up the pants and found his underwear inside them, as they would be when he finished dressing. Cute game, Kias. It didn't take him long to dress. The main problem was that the day was warm enough now that instead of the river water drying off, his own sweat kept him so damp that it was hard to pull some of the clothes on. They had also apparently peed on whatever poop cement had gotten on his clothes, dissolving it, or their aim when they bombarded him was so perfect that none of it went anywhere but on his head.
You're not very good at dressing yourself, said Royal Sun.
I'm covered with perspiration, said Sprout. It makes the clothing cling to my skin.
Poor humans. Clothing, sweating, stuck on the ground. Your lives are hard.
Thanks for making my life harder this morning, said Sprout.
We thought it was important for you to have a memorable experience, so you'd always be able to say, my first friends on the planet Nest were the playful Kias, who liked me so well they let me join in their games.
So you call this planet Nest?
Our humans called it that. We have names that mean the same thing in all our languages. So if you call it Nest or the Nest, no one who speaks your language will misunderstand you.
Better than the name we've been using.
Which is?
Descaladora.
I've never heard that word.
Lusitania was founded by colonists who spoke Brazilian Portuguese, and so they named the terrible disease that threatened to wipe them all out Descolada, which means something like taking things apart, or, better translation, ungluing everything.
Why did you name our planet after the disease? Asked Royal Sun.
Because the first transmission that came to the box from this planet was a digital representation of the complete genome of the Descolada.
But we have never had such a disease in the Nest.
So how did you know how to encode the trillions of bits of its genome? Asked Sprout.
That is a mystery, said Royal Sun.
It's the mystery we have to solve, said Sprout, because there are those among us who believe that Nest must have been the origin of this savage, murderous disease. We know it didn't evolve naturally. It was manufactured and then sent out to seed the galaxy with devastating plagues.
So, when you called us Descaladora, said Royal Sun, pronouncing the name surprisingly well, you feared us. You thought we would infect you with murderous illnesses.
We thought it might be your favorite art form, destroying and deforming the biota of other worlds.
That is useful information, said Royal Sun. Lie here on the grass, and don't worry about the bees. Their stings have been bred out of them, until I can report to others what you said.
Sprout took his advice, since he hadn't gotten enough sleep the night before this expedition. But he took care that when he lay down, he didn't have any flowers or bees under him, because he wasn't sure what was true and what was not. Sprout slept, and when he awoke with the bird walking on his chest, the sun was past noon.
"Your skin is turning red in the sun," said Royal Sun.
"My skin is normally dark enough that it isn't that big a problem," said Sprout.
"It isn't usually a problem because you grew up in a spaceship and you haven't been outside much more than 20 minutes at a time," said Royal Sun.
"Who told you that?"
"I made observations when I went to Q-Bay," he said. "Everybody's always keying things into the computer or manipulating images or data. No sunlight. You're becoming noticeably red."
Sprout decided not to be needlessly defiant. He sat up, then got to his feet and walked over into the nearest shade. Royal Sun came after him.
"When your cousin left, why didn't she take you?"
"I think she meant to, but I didn't want to go. So I stayed."
"Why did she leave?"
"We didn't discuss it, but I assume she decided that since you were resisting our visit..."
"We were not resisting," said Royal Sun. "We were getting acquainted."
"You challenged her because she broke an agreement she didn't know about."
"Were we incorrect?"
"She didn't know about the agreement because she chose not to converse with Peter Wiggin and Si Weng Mu and find out what had been agreed to."
"So she chose ignorance, even though she claimed she came here to learn."
"She is young and impulsive," said Sprout.
"You are also young. We know what children look like," said Royal Sun.
"I felt you taking genetic samples from me, and I'm sure you also took them from her. When you analyze them and compare us to other humans, I'll explain to you all the ways that we differ from ordinary humans. So far."
"Just you two children?"
asked Royal Sun. "We have siblings and cousins who share our most significant genetic changes, but only Thulium and I are assigned to do research on your world."
"And your idea of research is to take samples without asking questions?"
"Just like yours," said Sprout.
"Ah, but this is our world, and you came uninvited."
"I would be glad of an invitation now," said Sprout.
"But why would your visit have any value for us? We have gained everything we wanted to know from Peter and Royal Mother."
"Of course you haven't," said Sprout. "Or why would the Raven Dog have gone to Lusitania?"
"You're very uppity for someone begging for permission to stay here."
"You would not have taken samples from us if you didn't have the equipment to allow a close examination of our genomes."
"Would you like access to those machines?"
asked Royal Sun. "Maybe," said Sprout, "if you think I could use them."
"Easier for you than for us," said Royal Sun. "You have two hands that you can use at once, even though they're big and clumsy."
"Here's an easy question, Royal Sun. When someone on this planet sent a radio message to our box in the sky containing code to assemble ridiculously complex genetic molecules, was that done by ravens, by kias, some other birds, or by humans?"
"I don't know about any transmissions," said Royal Sun. "If birds sent them, we are not those birds."
"Thank you," said Sprout.
"For what?"
"For answering my question immediately and, I believe, truthfully," said Sprout.
"I was truthful, though I have no idea how you would go about discerning the truthfulness of a kia."
"Neither do I," said Sprout. "But at some level, I unconsciously made the decision to believe you. Whatever part of my mind decided that, I trusted. Of course, you didn't begin to really answer my question, but you did not attempt to conceal your misdirection, and I believe you don't actually know about the transmissions.
You do not talk like a child, said Royal Sun.
I would hope not, said Sprout.
Of course there are humans on this planet, said Royal Sun, but we are the inhabitants of the surface of this world, and you will only meet humans if we decide to allow it.
Are the humans your prisoners?
Absolutely not, but they and we respect our treaties and our boundaries.
Are you breaking a treaty by telling me they exist?
No, because my cousins all agreed that I should tell you.
Sprout looked around at the Kias that stood in the grass. They all moved a little from time to time, and every now and then one would flutter upward and drop right back down. If there was a pattern to it, Sprout hadn't detected it. Was this decided when I was in the water? Asked Sprout. Because when I was on dry land, I never heard any kind of discussion.
You don't speak or understand any of our languages, said Royal Sun, so you did not even know that we were speaking.
Sprout realized that he had never introduced himself, mostly because nobody was listening. My name is Brussels Delphiki, but everyone calls me Sprout.
If that is true, then your name is Sprout.
Wang Mu and Peter called you Royal Sun. Does that make it your name?
It does in your language, said Royal Sun.
You said that if we wanted to know something about your history on this planet, we should ask you first.
Not me. I'm language, not history.
By you, I meant whoever among the Kia or the Ravens is prepared to tell me.
Nobody is prepared to tell you, because we had no idea anyone was coming, till that flying box appeared in the sky.
Here are the things that we need to know, as scientists, said Sprout. We need to know how the humans got here, where they came from, when they left Earth's star system, when they arrived here, and which of the plants and animals here came from Earth. Then, if there have been genetic alterations, Royal Sun squawked.
These are good questions, he said, when Sprout fell silent. I will find out if anyone wants to answer them, and if it is allowed.
So I go back to sleep again? Asked Sprout.
Not this time. It will be easier if you come with me. Walking, not swimming or floating or playing dead, if you please.